once more under the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting second hour of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And I'm always kind of stuck at that point.
Let's give them some numbers to call. We can give a little disclosure here. We can do a song and dance, but that probably wouldn't be very good. They would turn the channel.
And you're certainly welcome to give us a call here if you have any questions about anything to do with the economy, investing, or things of that ilk. 773-1400 if you're in East Bell County. Otherwise,
1-866-597-1400. Anywhere else within the sound of our voices. It's funny, because of the government shutdown, a lot less news was being focused on Obamacare being rolled out with the individual mandate and so on. Because so much of the media attention was on D.C., they may have, anyone that was trying to show the problems of Obamacare in D.C. missed a very great opportunity. And there are some major things that I think would be appropriate in changes to the law that I think both sides could agree on. You said this earlier about some of the things that are coming out with Obamacare, where employers are basically going to give a voucher of a certain amount of money to their employees in many places so they can apply that to the marketplaces for insurance so that they can decide the plan that best suits them. And I would even take that a step further and say something along the lines of an insurance company would give you a voucher to say this will pay for this operation. Now find that operation.
That would be actually a good idea, I think.
The voluntary health care, when you're talking about LASIK eye surgery or gastric sleeves or gastric Ys or tummy tucks or any of the things that are considered voluntary, they're not something that you have to do to keep your health up. Insurance companies don't touch those generally unless they're in a Cadillac plan. And that means that the people that are the patients here shop around. And if you look at the overall medical care costs, they've been rising across the board, except in the voluntary area. And in the voluntary area, the prices have dropped drastically. I had LASIK surgery done on my eyes in 2006. And I waited till 2006 because in 2000, the last time I had looked at it, they were talking about $5,000 an eye to do the surgery. I did it in 2006, and it was $1,500 an eye, and now you can get both eyes done for $1,500. This is over a decade that has seen prices double in every other aspect of the medical world, but in the area where there's actual competitive pricing, where doctors are getting better the same as they are everywhere else, but the technology has been keeping up to keep the prices down and even bring them lower. It's in the voluntary world where they have to compete in a marketplace. If insurance companies have to compete in a marketplace and people that are purchasing the insurance have a voucher and they go out and they actively look for the plan that best suits them, that's going to bring insurance costs down. That's a good thing from Obamacare. Now, the fact that the marketplace is so full of bugs and isn't working,
well,
it isn't going to help at all.
I think one of the things that we appreciate that healthcare is expensive. We talk about it, but one of the things that I think a lot of people don't get because somebody else is paying for their healthcare,
right?
They're paying for their health insurance.
You can't even
the average. The Labor Department came out and looked at the cost of medical care benefits. And this is fascinating. This is weird. Full family coverage, average cost in the United States for a small and medium-sized firm, get this, $1,100 per family.
Per month?
Per month.
Yep. It's about where we fall.
Yep. The large companies who provide the same health benefits are paying about $1,300, $1,266.
Okay.
The larger the company gets, the more expensive it gets. I well remember not that many years ago when we were covering families for like $300 and some dollars.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I think because people are paying only a portion of their health coverage,
right,
they really don't understand that even if you could get group coverage at that level, that a lot of families, you know, if like to give you an example, let's just say you have somebody who's making a couple of $1,000s a month,
mm-hmm.
two workers, $4,000 a month, and if they can get the same bargaining power as the S&P 500 company and they have to pay $1,300 of that, and it's not tax deductible, by the way, to health care, they just can't afford to get the health care. Now, here's the key in that. A guy brought me a printout because he is considering leaving his employer and was shocked at the cost of health care for his family.
Mm-hmm.
This is just a couple, okay? 55, roughly, years of age. He was shocked that under Obamacare, in the marketplace, he would have to pay $526 a month for health insurance. Now, there's no government subsidy there.
Right.
Now, this is just a tiny sample of what's going on out there. But if there is that big of a difference where the marketplace in Texas, and this was at, I think the quote he got was from Blue Cross Blue Shield, who'd never been known as the least expensive provider.
Right.
But I think that is that's a pretty significant event. And I think that one of the reasons I think that there was an attempt to shut it down when they could, if that in fact is what we're going to see, of reduction in cost.
The thing, though, this is the big thing, is that they have to get the marketplace running so that people can get
right.
those quotes. And that has been an abysmal failure.
Well, I wouldn't say abysmal, but it's
I would
work.
Say abysmal. If any private company did a rollout like the federal government did of its federally run state marketplaces, which is basically one big system, I think there's 27 states in it.
Right.
If any private company, if Google or Yahoo or Cisco or let's even go to Walmart,
no.
rolled out a webpage mm-hmm. that was this broken.
You mean kind of like if Microsoft rolled out a version of Windows that had a lot of bugs in it?
Well, if the version of Windows that they rolled out doesn't really have bugs.
No, not this one. I'm talking about they used the first several sets of Windows they rolled out.
And
about as effective.
But people didn't upgrade. Where this one, this particular thing, you get a fine unless you sign up at one of these places. If you're under the individual mandate fine, the tax penalty, you will have a fine if you haven't signed up. And they have a limited period of time to do it, and it doesn't work.
Well, one of the things, obviously, is that's going to be probably postponed.
That's one of the things that the Republicans were asking for, and it didn't happen during the government shutdown. So there is a problem there. I'm fully behind that concept of, okay, postpone the mandate. I am not behind the methodology that they used to do. I think if they had been quiet and let the release of the marketplace speak and then say, look at the fiasco, it would have done a lot better than saying, we're going to shut down everything unless you get this into the law. Because they became louder than the problem. That's anytime there's a problem of this magnitude, it's a lot easier to let the problem do the speaking and then just say, this is dumb.
Well, on another subject, if you don't mind, I'm going to change subjects here. You are listening to the First World
right
Coach,
ahead.
By the way. J.P. Morgan in court.
J.P. Morgan Chase.
Well, it's just called J.P. Morgan here.
Yeah.
Anyway, when companies merge like that, the second company on the list has a tendency to vanish. Had a very fascinating little fine that they paid. Actually, not a fine.
Oh, yes. Yes.
It's a lawsuit.
Settlement.
They settled for $4 billion.
Oh, that's all. Only $4
billion. The Federal Housing Finance Agency had sued them for $6 billion. They settled for $4 billion. You know, one of those things, this is one of those little things that if you really don't know what happened, and that was 5 years ago we're talking about something happened, which is that Fannie and Freddie collapsed based largely on the fact that they had in their investment portfolios big chunks of mortgage securities that stopped paying. And JP Morgan Chase and Company. I don't know who CEO is, but he's in there. And it the fact that JP Morgan has acknowledged that they knowingly sold garbage to Fannie and Freddie.
Yeah.
To me is one of those really fascinating issues that should be filed away. Believe me, JP Morgan is not in the habit of settling for $4 billion,
no.
Which, by the way, severely impacted their earnings, when they're innocent. And the laying of blame for the mortgage collapse
this is finally coming
home to roost in some very, very interesting places.
JP Morgan Chase pays a settlement of $4 billion at the same quarter that Morgan Stanley has a 50% rise in revenue. So they would not...
Morgan Stanley?
Yeah, Morgan Stanley.
Yeah, okay, right. Yeah.
So they would not willingly do this settlement at this point in their competitive life cycle, because they're looking around at their competitors who are doing very well, and they're paying a settlement here, unless there is something true, very true, to the charge. The allegation is very simple. Some of the companies that were involved in the mortgage crisis, and they own huge chunks of those assets and were involved themselves in selling to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac mortgages that were not what they said they were. That's
one of those things to chalk up if you're, and a lot of people are upset at Fannie and Freddie in general. When you realize that, if you look at why they failed, and then you realize that major Wall Street firms are fessing up at this point, apparently the one unsettled case that's still percolating out there is $57 billion worth of securities that were not what they were supposed to be from Bank America. That's another little issue that's going to come along to Fannie and Freddie. $57 billion. Now, what the losses were, you know, they're in negotiations, so they're probably going to be continuing to talk about this. And that's one of the points that I think is really, really important when these crises is you really don't know for 5 to 7 years later what happened. And if you make up your mind early on, you don't know what happened. And if we don't really pay attention as a democracy, if we don't pay attention to what really happened and tell our elected officials to deal with what really happened, not what the politicians say at the moment it happens, we're doomed to repeat it again. And
right.
You know, you can give that quote if you'd like that you
yes.
gave during the break from Otto von Bismarck.
Oh, what the laws are like sausages. You don't want to see what goes into them.
Yeah,
that's Otto von Bismarck.
But that other thing about the Balkans.
Oh, yeah. Otto von Bismarck was the prime minister of Prussia in the 1870s. And a lot of amazing stuff is attributed to him as far as what he says.
A lot of people say things that should be attributed to him.
Right. Let's see.
But the issue is that what was he says, 1870s or 1880s?
1878. He said, Europe today, this is 78, so we're talking about decades before World War I.
Uh-huh.
He said, Europe today is a powder keg, and the leaders are like men smoking in an arsenal. A single spark will set an explosion that will consume us all. I cannot tell you when that explosion will occur, but I can tell you where. Some damned foolish thing in the Balkans will set it off.
And it was, the funny thing is, he was still prime minister at the beginning of World War I.
Of Prussia.
Of Germany at that point. it's just, there are so many patterns in history that follow through. One of the patterns that I think it'd be fascinating to watch. I don't know if it's going to happen.
He was first chancellor of Germany during the time he was prime minister of
right.
Prussia, all the way up to 1890.
Oh, he's
so,
the chancellor of Germany, right.
It went up to 1890. He wasn't in public office after that.
But
he was a prince. So
yeah. Yeah, well, that...
Anyway, that concept there, that something else happened in Illinois. It's kind of on along the same concept as what you were just saying about when politics gets into the realm of unreality. Illinois Supreme Court just upheld a lower court decision about state sales tax on Amazon purchases when the retail purchase is being made outside of the state. They said it's not constitutional. You can't put a sales tax for the state on something that's being purchased outside the state, even if they do it on the internet. And that's based on the Illinois Constitution. But that concept is one the state of Texas, for instance, has been beginning to mandate that sales taxes be put on Amazon purchases when they're made outside the state. And I don't think that that's reasonable. If I, well, here's it. For instance, growing up, the Sears catalog was a common feature in most households. And when you purchased through the Sears catalog, you had to pay shipping. It would arrive, but you didn't pay sales tax because you purchased it outside of the state. Amazon is a more efficient Sears catalog. Mm-hmm. It is a catalog that covers everything. Now, if you buy, if you at the same time period went to Sears in Texas and you bought something, you would pay sales tax on it. Well, that makes sense to me.
If the problem with that is, with Texas, is Amazon has a distribution center in Texas.
Yep.
And so, in essence, even though the web server that you access may be outside of the state of Texas.
Well, that's not what was held as unconstitutional in Illinois. It wasn't the distribution center. Most of what is sold on Amazon isn't sold by Amazon. Mm-hmm. Well, it's sold by retailers that are selling on Amazon.
And you don't pay taxes on that.
That's the thing, that in Illinois you were.
But the state
Supreme Court said, no, you can't do that.
That's very reasonable.
California was one of the first states to do this, and they had two big distributing centers in California. And California said, well, we're going to tax anything that went through those distributing centers. So Amazon promptly shut those distributing centers and told the retailers that were selling in Amazon that they had to charge prices, and their business dropped horribly.
Well, the Texas deal with Amazon is that Texas went to Amazon. They worked out an amicable arrangement.
Yeah, and it made sense.
And you do pay sales tax, and I don't think that that's – frankly, I don't think that's a bad thing. But anyway, because they don't charge me shipping. We have a caller on 866-597-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. It's Chris in Georgetown.
Hi.
How are you?
Great.
How are you doing, Chris?
I'm doing fine. Doing fine. Enjoying a nice Saturday evening, nice Saturday weather.
So did you start to say nap?
Yeah.
Enjoying a nice nap while you guys are rattling on. Yes. All right. That makes sense.
Now, I was just calling you. I just heard y'all talk a little bit about the Obama, Affordable Care Act and other stuff. And I don't see how this is good at any point, no matter what it does, because, again, it has the government running and making rules for healthcare and politicians.
Whoa, hang on. You don't think the government already makes rules for healthcare?
Yeah, that was pretty clear that they did that.
No, they do, and I don't like that because half the time they don't obey the rules that they make.
No, I'm talking about Medicare sets the standard for healthcare, and every hospital that offers Medicare service has to have the same standard for everybody.
As well
as, I hate to break this to you, but we have been under
emergency
government control for many, many years.
Emergency rooms cannot turn down an emergency case, even if the person can't pay, and if there's no other hospital available. If it's a not-for-profit hospital, they have to take it anyway. If it's a for-profit hospital, they have to take it if there's not a not-for-profit hospital.
Believe
in the
me,
area.
My comments to people who object to the government controlling what healthcare does.
You just look at
real
healthcare
simple,
right
get
now.
Get rid of Medicare. But so, as soon as you, I you say get
say,
rid of Medicare,
turn, you would say this is a good thing that what the government has been doing is good. Then,
oh
right?
No,
the overall,
no,
overall,
we don't see.
Wait a minute.
That's
you got
a political attribution. We don't say the government is doing a good thing or a bad thing here. What we say is the government is doing something. From the economics term, from the concept of the economic world, to give an ethic to something that the government does is not something that I consider my job. Yeah. My job is to say, look at reality, what is happening today, what was happening before. If you say the government is doing something bad, I don't want to apply that. I want to say the government could do this in a more efficient way. I could say that very easily. But when you say the government is doing something good or doing something bad, well, we just look at reality.
You know, this is the point, and Chris, here it is in a nutshell. For 40 years, actually about 45 years, the cost of health care in the United States was the fastest rising in the world by a long shot and was well on the way at Mach 5 to bankrupting the country just like it did General Motors.
And okay? A large portion of that was government control.
Right. And the point is that something had to change. Somebody came up with a program. We call it Obamacare. It changed and the health care costs started leveling off. Now, if somebody can come up with a better program,
we're all for that.
There's basically two ways to go here. And one is come up with a better program and fix it, but the government's involved. Or we say if old people and poor people die on the street when there's medical care available that they can't afford, that's okay too. We have to choose one of those two positions.
Yeah.
China has the position of if you're old and you can't pay for health care, you die.
We've decided across the board
if you're sick,
to do that.
If you're sick and poor and you can't pay for health care, you die.
And this is something that would make national news. It would be all over the place if an older woman showed up at an emergency room and was turned down because she couldn't afford it and
right.
died of a heart attack right there. Because that happens in China. We've agreed in the United States, not unanimously, not all at once, not in one single place or one single vote, but over a long period of time, we have agreed that we're not going to turn down people that can't afford health care.
Yeah, so as a result, the rest of us, two things happen. There's no market, free market involved. So the prices just skyrocket because there's a monopoly.
I think that's insane.
And the second...
Why is there a monopoly?
Because
there was no plan involved here.
When you go to the doctor, you go to a hospital for something, do you shop around for the lowest price?
I just typically go to a doctor that I like.
Yeah, you get a doctor's life, but you don't shop on the price.
You only know what your deductible is, usually. You don't know what the overall charge is. And when you do get the charge, it doesn't make any sense. And you get the thing from the insurance thing, and that doesn't make any... You cannot reconcile the two.
The monopoly is driven by the fact that Medicare sets the prices.
Okay, so
if you want to be mad at something, be mad at Medicare.
So you're telling me that... Okay, the problem is the government has gotten involved and the pricing has gone up ever since the government got involved. Am I correct in that?
Not necessarily. What we're saying is that we have developed a system for healthcare.
We are the government.
That has not had a concise plan. If you look at how education in the medical field is funded, you'll find that Medicare does a vast amount of that education.
Medicare is the sole provider. It is the very system that the rest of us don't like, okay?
Here's my problem, guys.
Yeah.
Medicare, which is, if I'm looking at Medicare itself, is there's a lot of fraud involved in Medicare.
Very little, actually. Very little fraud involved in Medicare.
As a percentage.
For our medical system through Medicare, billing...
Mm-hmm.
All sorts of
right.
stuff.
Right, exactly.
And
they do.
It's a monopoly.
Right.
And so here's this, I'm going on a philosophy, just kind of an economic and philosophical basis of this, is saying, you know, they've done this for 40 years.
Right.
Price has gone up. Government sets the standards.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're going to put another giant bureaucracy in charge to tell us everything else.
Hang on. That last statement was incorrect.
What we have here is
If you're going to make a statement about a problem, make it factual. Okay?
There is a real problem here.
And there
very,
is,
very
first
real
off,
problem.
When you compare the size, of Medicare's bureaucracy to Obamacare's bureaucracy, which covers more people, it's about a tenth. And so Obamacare apparently has a lot fewer employees. And secondly, Obamacare injects an element of the free marketplace into the system for the first time. Now, Medicare, though, continues to drive the prices. The issue is, and I've said this again and again and again to people, are you willing to get rid of Social Security and Medicare?
I am.
I would be, too. See, I think that there are better solutions.
But the point is...
100% I I am, and that's my problem.
If you poll the American people, Medicare has an approval rating of about 87%.
You're great. I mean, I have an approval rating, too, if I was sucking the lifeblood out of my younger generation to get what I needed.
Gotcha. Sure. I'm telling you. Listen, Chris.
Again, we got to look at reality
you
here.
You can't pull medical care away from people who have been funding it for 40 years.
Okay, so we can recognize the problem.
But they're funding it off of what I... It's not like they're funding it.
They paid for 40 years of somebody else's care. Now it's their term, and they vote.
Yeah.
That's great.
This is a democracy.
This is my point. Okay, Social Security is the same way.
Yeah.
They put into it, and they're getting more out of it than they put into it.
Sure.
Medicare, they put into it, and they're getting more that they're putting in, out of it than they put into it.
Correct.
So it's taken more and more people, or I guess less and less people, to fund it.
Right. But we are in a democracy, and we, the people of the United States, pass some laws to set up the healthcare system the way it is. We, the people of the United States, collectively are vigorously unwilling to change that.
This is the
and
major issue here.
So we have
here.
To deal with the problem that it's going to bankrupt us. Okay.
The major issue here isn't Obamacare. The major issue here isn't Medicare. The major issue here is free market medical care. That's the major issue. As long as we focus on Obamacare or on Medicare or on Social Security, we're avoiding the true issue. You have to come up with a better solution. You can't take away the thing that's there as the only solution.
Yeah, and that's very.
I do have a solution.
What's your solution?
And that's to let free markets go across. You know, let people pick and choose their medical system. Or their provider, whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm. That's basically what I was saying earlier.
You just defined Medicare.
Dictate it and not let a giant, you know, government bureaucracy with Medicare, Medicaid.
You mean like set up a marketplace? You mean like set up a marketplace in a state where people could choose
compare plans and buy the money?
And it's a marketplace that the government is dictating everything that you're doing.
No,
wait a minute. Hold on just a second here, Chris. How do you think it is that the New York Stock Exchange is regulated?
I'm not saying that you don't have to have government's not involved in it. I know you have to have government involved in it and rules and regulations. That's fine with me.
That's what Obamacare's marketplace is.
I mean, how big is this law? I mean, was it 1,000 pages?
Actually, the actual solid part of the law was several hundred pages, but it was
700 something. Yeah. I actually went through and read the whole thing as part of a continuing education program. The issue now isn't the size of the law; it's the size of the regulations around the law. There's about 10,500,000 words in the regulations,
which is about the same that happened for every other major law that's been passed.
Mm-hmm.
That's my point, though. I'm not arguing the point that we don't need to find the solution. I think we do.
Okay.
Okay, but to say that when you pass a law that is unreadable, that you can't even understand.
Chris, have you ever tried to read any bill? Chris, have you ever
alternative minimum tax?
Any bill passed by Congress?
Basically, if you can read a bill passed by Congress, you should be put in a mental institution.
Yeah, I have sat down and even tried to read federal regulations, and the bills are converted into a regulation, and thank God, because they're written in. Unfortunately, they're written in such a way that the definitions are very, very precise, and in the process, it makes it extremely difficult to read any legal document. Have you ever read a health insurance policy?
No, but I don't want to, and that's not true.
I'm going to step
a law that you can't understand.
Yeah, I'm going to step away from economics for a moment and say something about leadership. As long as politics are driven by what something that isn't wanted, to get rid of something or against something, it is going to fail. It's just very, very rare that there's enough negative sentiment to cause a win. In order to win in sports, in business, and in politics, you have to be for something. You have to have a very clear definition of the thing that you want. And when the thing that you want is to reverse something else, rarely works. You have to say, here's what I want to replace it with. And that's not forthcoming
right
now.
And I have talked to, written our congressman and everything else, and it's very simple. It's a very simple solution here. it's complex to produce, but simple to do. And that is, if you and the people who want to see a change and Obamacare done away with want to do away with it, great. Come out with an alternative system that will accomplish the reduction in costs you can sell to the American people.
There were some great plans put forth in the Ronald Reagan administration that have some solutions that weren't taken up in this one. If somebody comes out and says, we're not getting rid of the whole thing, we recognize the need that exists. This is the reason why it won't work to take away Obamacare as it stands. Even if it's just what's been implemented up to last year, is that there are millions of young people between the ages of 21 and 25 that are now covered that were not. There are millions of people that had pre-existing conditions that are now covered and couldn't be before.
People who, if you lost your job before Obamacare and you had group health insurance, you were basically left holding the bag.
If you had an existing condition, you couldn't get coverage.
Beginning January 1st, you can, and from what the guy brought me the other day, literally a guy who's 55 years old and not in the greatest health, who is in a point where he wants to quit, he wants to leave his job. So he went out and did a little bit of research, got his quotes under Obamacare, and he discovered, astonishingly, that beginning in 2014, he can afford to buy health insurance because, A, it's group, and, B, it is his pre-existing conditions don't count against him. So he's now free to move either away from his job or to another job for the first time.
Let me tell you what I think the real problem is here, and this is one that has been glossed over. We have a tax system that is absurd and broken. We have a corporate tax rate that is the highest in the world. We have a country that is running on regulations in the tax code that are beyond incomprehensible. And we're focused on something that has zero probability of passing.
You know, and
to say that I like Obamacare is like saying that I like the tax code. Both statements are wrong.
Zero possibility of the past.
Well, there is no way during the government shutdown that they were going to reverse Obamacare. Impossible. But that was the stated objective.
And by the way, did you notice that towards the end of the discussions, the Republicans totally dropped the concept of defunding Obamacare?
That was the reason why it started.
I'm not arguing any of that stuff. Look, the Republicans are a bunch of idiots to do what they did. They should have basically enforced the law as soon as it came around, and everybody had to do it, and no exemption, zero, nothing, and enforced it 100%.
Then it would have been hated, and they would have reversed it. Yeah. Correct.
I completely agree, but for some reason they chose not to.
We get callers like last hour where somebody was upset because the administration was enforcing the law on the books for government shutdowns and saying he was abusing his power. So even if you do your job, you're abusing your job. Even if you don't do your job, you're abusing your job. Basically, politics is gross. It's disgusting.
You know, and it's like if you came into our office and you said, I have this portfolio here from this other place where I have my money being managed, and I really don't like the way it's being managed. And you said, and we said, okay, our plan is to get rid of it. Would you do business with us? That's our whole plan. Just get rid of all of your investment management.
You're speaking to the choir. I'm not arguing the point of getting rid of it. I'm arguing the point of it being a giant bureaucracy that 700 pages of rules and regulations that makes no sense to add upon the issue we already have.
But
and
the point is,
the Republicans have not.
What would you replace
anything.
It with, Chris?
And whatever is replaced, because it has to go through Congress and it is a complex area, there's going to be hundreds of pages of whatever that bill is, too.
And it's just the reality. If you read a bill that comes out of the Texas House or something, they also are almost unreadable. But the point I'm saying is, I've been a Republican all of my adult life. I have voted in primaries, given to presidential candidates a lot of money over my years, as much as I could afford, because I believe in the idea of the concept of being a Republican, that this is a republic, it's not a democracy. But the point is that I am deeply concerned at this point that the Republican Party is in a circular firing squad over this issue rather than doing something positive and selling itself to the American people. It's getting more radical and smaller. And very frankly, history indicates that something is about to happen. That may not, but the pattern is here. I don't know if you remember when Phil Graham was a Democrat and a representative in the state of Texas.
And he switched parties.
And he switched parties to being a Republican. There was this Republican landslide under Ronald Reagan where he came out with some brilliant new ideas to cut through the bureaucracy,
simplify the tax code.
He sold it to the American people.
If the Republicans today went on a platform of we need to simplify the tax code, we need to, I don't think there's a call on that line. I think it was hung up already. We need to simplify the tax code. We need to focus on making the bureaucracy smaller while keeping the benefits.
That's something people
can get behind. That's a solution of, oh, wow, yes, the tax code is way too complex. Who's going to get on there and say, well, no, it needs to be more complex than that?
And if instead they come, you know, the point is, until we conservatives, and I am one, come out with something that we can sell to the American people, the middle ground people, the people, not the right wing or the left wing, but the people in the center who actually make the final decisions, we're just being angry about nothing.
See, you can clearly say you're a conservative, and in certain areas I am a conservative, but I would consider myself to be more of a libertarian. I consider myself to say I think small government is important. I think government is there and it needs to be there. There are regulations that need to be followed and laws that need to be enforced. But when they're so intrusive, that interferes with a lot of other things. And there's a balance that we have to walk. You and I agree.
When I say conservative, by the way, I object to the concept that's being pushed by the I kind of tend to refer to Tea Party as reactionists.
I think that's what it is. It's a reaction to something.
That everybody needs to have a federal ID on them at all times and be tracked by the federal government. That seems to me to be a bit absurd.
Yeah, same to me.
Okay, thanks for calling, Chris.
We may or may not have another call, and we've got to run some commercials. So, caller, if you're there, you're on the air. And we don't have it.
You're right. It was very good. We got to run some commercials, and it's been a good discussion. Just for the record, folks, we're not left-wing liberal nuts. we are people who are very concerned about our clients' portfolios and about the performance of the economy. And we, among other things,
I'll just tell you, conservative nuts.
Right up front, I'm a loyal Republican, and I'm concerned that the party's destroying itself, which is not a good thing for any Republican. So anyway, we'll be back after these important words from KTEM sponsors. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. Telephone numbers in here, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400. Only about 10 minutes left.
Can I try to get off?
Let's try it.
Of politics?
We could try.
There is, it's pretty clear now that there is a person named Janet Yellen who is about to be the single most influential financial person in the world.
If it makes it through the politics that we're supposed to give up.
I strongly suspect she will have absolute unanimous approval, even though I've actually listened to someone whose knowledge of economics was meager, to say the least, on a video, who's on the Wall Street Journal editorial board, apparently, who was dissing her pretty hard. Basically says she's in favor of easy money, and he believes that the Fed should tighten up the money and put us into a recession immediately to kill the terrible inflation.
The people that don't understand the system of how money flows, I'm certainly glad that they're not the ones that are put in a position where they can regulate it. The idea behind what the Federal Reserve does needs to stay apolitical. And I am totally for Janet Yellen being the chairperson now. Do we have to start saying chairperson?
I would.
First chairwoman of the Federal Reserve. She, her husband is a Nobel Prize winning economist. The Nobel Prize
I think she's still going to be the chairman.
Is it chairman still?
Yeah.
Her husband won the Nobel Prize for a paper that she helped write.
And
so it says something right there that
basically a really non-political, very, very intelligent, very well-educated, very experienced person taking over at this point in time is
pretty nice. It's going to be continuation.
You know what's fascinating is it's something that works.
Right.
There's a fascinating little piece of history here. During the shutdown, economists turned to the St. Louis Fed for their data. And one of the perceptions that has come out, at least
spent a lot of time
among
on their
the
website
people who have followed this very carefully, is the Federal Reserve is highly functional and the federal government is not.
Right.
Which is, man.
Private system versus public system.
Well, a government-private partnership, the Federal Reserve.
Right. Well, the Federal Reserve is the regulatory body. It's a self-regulatory organization for the banking system of the United States.
Right, which is now taking over the investing system pretty quickly.
Well, a big chunk of it, yeah. But it's a self-regulatory organization that the people at the top are nominated by the president and I don't want to say approved by the Senate, but that's basically what has confirmed by the Senate. And it works really well. They're given a very clear set of tasks. These are the things that you do. Some of them conflict a little bit.
Just a little bit. Congress says,
well, you need to make sure we don't have inflation or deflation. And while you're at it, make sure that the markets aren't overpriced or underpriced.
And we have full employment.
Right. And the Federal Reserve, so giving these pretty impossible sets of criteria, that very limited tools in certain areas, they're able to do something that's been very effective. I mean, it's very simple for us to look back at the Great Recession and look at the actions taken by the Federal Reserve in the United States. This is one of the first times in history that you can see different effects happening in different places based on central bank moves.
All right,
Europe, they went into a nosedive because the central bank tightened up money, didn't go loose with the money, and they're still in a recession.
I wanted to throw in a little bit of geeky stuff here that, this is Jeff, that I find
I can say geeky stuff too.
Very comforting.
Comforting geeky stuff.
Yes.
Okay. This is good stuff.
I went to the Morningstar website, which, by the way, I would recommend to anyone pay your $150 a year, whatever they charge, to...
Not anyone. Five-year-olds probably wouldn't get as much out of it.
Well, anyone who is interested in investing, seriously, the Morningstar website... paying for the premium content is really, I think, very, very valuable. But at any rate, they have categories of funds, and mutual funds in their Morningstar categories behave more like the real world of investing than do the indexes, which are totally artificial. And I won't go into too much of that except for the fact that, say, that when I look at the five-year return right now in the markets, it's not so much a matter that the returns have been good over the last 5 years, which you would expect given that 5 years ago was 2008. But when we look at the returns, they line up precisely the way portfolio theory says they should. The best returns are in stocks, in U.S. equities, are in small stocks. The mid-level returns are in the mid-level stocks, and the lowest are in the largest stocks. I mean, if not familiar with this, study after study and paper after peer-reviewed paper that basically say that over the long term, the U.S. equity markets, the smaller set of companies that are actually traded on the New York Stock Exchange or traded on exchanges will tend to do better than the mid-sized companies, which will tend to do better than the large companies. You know, and right now, of course, the large companies are on a bit of a tear, so everybody's after that. Then, if you go in and look, value is consistently outperforming growth, which is another thing that's supposed to happen over the long term. So short term, there's this sense, and I think it's a very reasonable sense for most folks, that the markets are crazy, that whatever's going on doesn't make any sense. I mean, we just almost had a government shutdown, and we got a market rise.
We did have a government shutdown, and we still had a market
but
rise.
But we only had a partial. But back in 2011, we had a threatened – we had a very similar event occur in 2011, and the markets dropped 15-16%.
Right.
And so –
We're getting a more solid base at this point. Yes.
Yeah, in the short term, I think there is a sense that the markets are crazy. But in the long term, if you have the courage and the faith in the system to invest in the asset classes that have the best theoretical long-term return, and you stick with those over a period of 5, 10, 15 years, it's amazing how it works out exactly the way the science of portfolio management, and I told you this was geeky, says it's supposed to do. And I just wanted to comment on that because I think that's really cool. I mean, that's just, you know, where I am on this stuff. Anyway, you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach. We do have a few minutes left, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400. I have a couple of other things that really have nothing to do with politics. And they are much more leading indicators of what's coming. On the surface, it may sound a little bit far-fetched. There's news today coming out about prosthetic hands being used with monkeys, and these are the same kind of monkey experiments where they have the electrodes in the brain.
I would not want to touch a monkey anyway. I would use a prosthetic hand.
Yeah. It's all monkey business.
Okay.
The monkeys can feel through the prosthetic hand. They have sensors in the hand that allows them to have touch sensitivity.
Wow.
There are thought-controlled exoskeletons coming out for paraplegics and quadriplegics where they can walk with these exoskeletons. Eventually, they'll be able to feel through the exoskeletons. Anyone that thinks that where we are is where we're going to be for the next several decades just needs to look around a little bit. Our technology is expanding so fast. It's not slowing down. It's speeding up. Our quality of life will be far better in a decade. There will be new devices that we will all decide that we need, which leads to growth in our economy. As long as we are forward-thinking in our innovations, if we're looking ahead and saying, what would make my life easier, and then we make it, growth happens in the economy, because if multiple people are doing that, if large numbers of people are finding new and better ways of doing things, it increases productivity, increases our quality of life. It gives us more free time to do the things that we've already done, only do it better. And we're about out of time.
And I also want to second that we have an economy that is the healthiest, most dynamic, and most stable economy on the planet. We sometimes, in the midst of all the negativity, tend to forget that.
Yeah.
We are living in the best of times in the best of nations. And, yeah, we're fighting through something, and I really do have faith that we will find a positive outcome to this.
I do, too. I think because enough of us, America is becoming more and more educated, and sometimes that's self-education. When we have the tools to understand the conflict, we have the ability to resolve the conflict, and we're about out of time. So if you'd like to contact us.
This is the Personal Wealth Coach, and if you'd like to contact us off the air, we have a local telephone number, voicemail on the weekend. We answer the phone. It's not a voice. It's not a mail tree or a voicemail tree or something during the week. It's 947-1111.
You can also reach it toll-free at 1-800-914-PLAN. That's 1-800-914-7526. You can also reach us by email, jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com, or you can go to our webpage, tpwc.com.
Your Fox News station in Central Texas. News Radio 1400 KTEM AM. Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.